Dave Asprey spoke, and he was talking about eating. He's like, listen, like, if you are hungry 2 hours after you eat, you failed at your last meal.
Agreed.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and entrepologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass. These are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So the opposite of badass is going home after a crummy Thursday evening and wallowing on the couch with a tub of ice cream and a glass of red wine. I don't know anyone who has ever done that before. But if you were someone to do that, then today's guest is someone you need to know about. Erin Wathen is a food expert. She came to understand how we diet and why we don't do well on them after her own personal journey of yo-yo dieting starting when she was just in high school. This is a story that so many of us can relate to, but we don't know how to break free from. Erin talks extensively about food addiction, and we went into really great detail in understanding that it's not food that we are after, it's actually feelings that we are chasing, and more explicitly, it's usually a neurochemical reaction that we are trying to elicit. And when we break it all down like that, it all seems so simple. But more importantly, what it enables us to do is start to engage in behavior that is much more productive for our health and puts us in a headspace where we feel so much more successful about our life. All of us on some level have a challenge with food addiction. We eat subconsciously. It's one of the pieces of information that is so readily available to us as consumers in the Western world. This was a fascinating conversation, and I am delighted to introduce you to the expertise, background, and wisdom of Erin Wathen. Erin Wathen, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's set some context for everybody. We're going to talk about food and diets and food addiction today, but take us through your personal story. How did you get to this place personally and professionally?
I grew up in California where I was pretty athletic, you know, always outside. But right around the age of 14, almost 15, I went on my first diet. And I was one of those kids. Looking back, I was just fascinated with sugar. Like, I remember distinctly, like, getting my Easter basket and eating it all by the time we got to we had to go to church on Easter morning. So I just always had a real obsession with sugar. It became an issue. But my first diet was, like I said, when I was 14, almost that summer I turned 15. I had a summer birthday. And I lost 30 pounds that first time. So much weight that when I came back to school, a couple of the teachers thought I was a transfer student, even though my class had like 140 people. So I was not new to the school. Losing weight is one thing, but keeping it off is a whole different scenario. That was the first real time I'd ever done that. Like, I didn't know anything about it. I know I got a book from the library written by Cheryl Teagues. And that's what you have to do, for those of you who have no idea who I'm talking about. She was a Sports Illustrated model back in the day. That's how we learned about things, the library. And I just cut my calories and overexercised, and there it was. But maintaining it was hard. And that became the beginning of a long yo-yo period of up 20 pounds, you know, down 25 and vice versa. That started at that age. And it was just always, I was always either on a diet, about to go on a diet, obsessing about my next diet. I was never just living. And when we had kids, I came out to the suburbs from New York City and I started teaching group exercise. I'd always worked out when I was working, you know, professionally. I would come home and just go straight to the gym. So exercise was never a problem. And I always exercised a lot, yet I always felt like I had some extra weight. And I could always start a diet. It was the consistency, or I could lose weight, but then I was miserable. It was just always, I called like the white noise in the back of my mind of like how much I was weighing, you know, how many calories I'd eaten that day, you know, could I be skinny by the wedding? Just this ongoing internal struggle. So when I started teaching exercise, I thought maybe this will be like the magic that I've been looking for my whole life, right? And that wasn't it either. So teaching spinning, then it was yoga, and then it was Pilates, you know, that there was no magic. And then a couple years ago, I was like, it's got to be what I'm putting in my mouth. So I became very knowledgeable about nutrition. So I got certified in integrative nutrition, meaning like the whole person. So it's not just, I mean, you can be as picky and particular, meticulous about every single thing you eat or drink. But if the rest of your life is chaos, are you healthy? Not really, right? So that was my first real venture into the professional world of health and wellness, other than teaching like a spin class, because my undergrad is sociology and my master's is human resources, neither of which are super helpful when it comes to nutrition. And what you read in Shape magazine isn't super helpful professionally either. So then I became really interested in this whole concept of food addiction, because I kept hearing about, you know, sugar is addictive, you know, people that said that they were going to like Overeaters Anonymous, that kind of became something I heard a lot about in certain circles. And I was just doing a lot of research, and I came in contact with this expert in Iceland of all places. And I reached out to her because I just kind of wanted to learn a little bit. I thought maybe if I'm lucky, she would like, you know, send me her book or whatever. And she invited me into her program, which looking back on it, like, I can't believe I actually did it, because I had the least amount of professional education in that subject matter. You know, there were doctors, registered dietitians, like psychologists. And there I was with my, you know, Pilates certification, you know, holding my own. So I had to really catch up on a lot of subjects as far as like the actual science of food, because it's one thing to understand, you know, what a carb is, but to understand like what it actually does like through your body is a whole different level. So once I finished my food addiction counseling certification, I ended up writing a book, which is called Why Can't I Stick to My Diet? And the title is a little bit misleading, because it's all about why we go on a diet in the first place. It's not about like, this is the magic diet. When you open it up, I'm going to give you the keys to the kingdom. And I know a lot of people think there's a secret when you open up my book, that I'm actually going to tell you like how, you know, how to actually like rule the universe. That's not in there. Sorry.
I was going to say,
yeah, you're like, here it is, the Holy Grail. No. So that's how I got where I'm at right now, as far as the nutrition, the food addiction, and just really understanding on a much deeper level and of how the science works, and then how the emotional component comes into play. Because when I think back to all the times I gained weight on, you know, Weight Watchers, you know, after I got on a diet with Weight Watchers, or, you know, The Zone, or I'm really dating myself now, but all of, you know, all the fat-free stuff, it was never that those things were inherently good or bad. It was that I never ever addressed on a real level why I gained the weight in the first place. Because we kind of this mindset of like, well, let's just go on this magic diet and then we'll lose, you know, the 15, 20 pounds. And then when we get to this magic number, then we can eat however we want, which again, doesn't make any sense, but we all believe this or collectively agree to believe this. And it wasn't until I started making the connection that like, wait, when I have a feeling I'm hungry or I think I'm hungry or I'm eating, like there's very like simple connections I made in my own behavior of I'm aggravated on the phone with my mom and now I'm going towards ice cream and I'm eating ice cream while on the phone with her. Like, this is not good. Like, very basic things that I know a lot of people have done a million times. So when I started realizing I had an emotion, I was going to food. And then when I saw the other side of how the idea of certain foods brought up emotions in me or other people, and Thanksgiving, at least in America, is a good example of that, because people get so bent out of shape if the food is not right, like cranberry sauce is not right, or the pumpkin pie is not right. Like, they get emotionally invested in how the food is supposed to be. No, for real.
Like, I know. I know. Yeah, I know. I'm laughing because I see this truth all the time.
Yeah, no, I mean, no matter who you marry, their family does it wrong, right? So, so when I noticed this, like, all across the board, no matter who it is, how much money they make, where they live, how much of our lives are spent, we get really excited about food and we have a feeling and it prompts food. Like, it just, I really saw this just rampant across so many different people I knew and talked to and clients, that I knew I was onto something a lot bigger than, you know, my food recommendations. So, you know, emotional eating is why so many people gain weight back. It's because they never get to the foundation of why are you 10 pounds overweight? And don't give me some sort of platitude about, you know, you put yourself last on your list. No, no, really. Like, why?
Right.
Because it's very easy to just ignore that and just go on, you know, some commercial diet or some book or something you read in a magazine versus getting in there and saying, like, you know, I was stopping by drive-thru or I was annoyed at how powerless I felt at work. So I was eating ice or whatever it is. Odds are once you like look at it and address it, you don't have to do it again. It's not that bad, but we're so afraid of it. We'll just do anything to avoid it, which means it's almost always going to come back.
And I think in general, we're just disconnected from our feelings.
Yeah.
We don't know what to do with it. We were driving the other day, my husband and I, and someone just started road raging on someone else. And the person who admittedly was being a little bit less than courteous in traffic, it wasn't really the end of the world. And I said to him, I'm like, I don't even think this has anything to do with driving. It just feels like an emotionally acceptable way of discharging anger we have about other things in our life. We don't know the person. We can honk on our horn. We can be a little bit uptight. We're disconnected from their emotions. And it just becomes an outlet. It's the same as like trolls on the internet. They're angry people who just have this opportunity. And I think I watch people in my own practice. They just mindlessly engage with their food or their coffee or their wine drinking or just their consumption of anything in general. It could be technology. And they're not connected to why they may be doing it or what is behind it or the fact that they are actually chasing a feeling. And I think in this case, what you're describing is food is the same way. It's just we do it five times a day. And there's consequences to those choices that are impactful on our health and very visible to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about like trolls on the internet, it is really easy to, you know, sit in your mom's basement and bag on some celebrity for, you know, the way they parent or, you know, just when I hear like how, you know, people are getting bagged on by internet trolls, I always just imagine someone in a dark basement in their mom's basement. I don't know why. That's not always my mental go-to because it's so easy, right, to just pick on someone when it's never about the other person. It's always about you, right? So many of us are detached from what we're feeling and it's so much easier to go drown ourselves in, you know, what we think is connection, meaning like social media or, you know, something like that, or food, which legitimately we do have to eat to survive. Like, we can't just never eat again because we've realized we have a problem with it. And but there is a way to eat that doesn't mean it's a giant, you know, smorgasbord of sugar and fat and, you know, low caloric malnutrition, sorry, high caloric malnutrition.
So how do we spot food addiction in our own lives? And I think probably we could fill in the blank, frankly, food, alcohol, technology, shopping, whatever it is. But in this case, like, how do we spot it? What are some things that you're, that, you know, in you working with clients, you're like, oh, like, you're clearly addicted to food.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I definitely had like a huge problem with sugar and Diet Coke, which again, I could send in an 8-year-old and they could buy them at the store and would not be a problem, but I couldn't send in an 8-year-old to a liquor store, which is a whole thing.
Right.
For me, it was, I had a major headache every morning. If I didn't get my fix, you know, I was secretive about like my little stashes of gummy bears in the car, you know, the way that I was behaving about it, it was the intention behind it. And I wasn't feeling okay until I had it. For me too, it was, you know, I needed more and more and more to feel all right. And when I look back and realize the high amounts of sugar that I was needing, I know the science behind why this was happening now, but I needed more and more high fructose corn syrup, which is all gummy bears are really, just in acute shape, to get the same amount of just baseline functioning. That's how I knew there was a problem, because I was hiding it, because it was, you know, if someone walked in, if you'd be embarrassed, that's a problem. Like, you know, there's just certain people where, you know, it's all about the intention, right? So it's the whole classic, like, do you drink alone? That's kind of a cheesy thing to say, but would you be embarrassed if someone else walked in on you? That's kind of an easy way to say it. Do you not feel okay until you, you know, check your social media or until you have your booze or whatever you're doing? But there are, you know, biological ways you can see if you're addicted to food or not. But a lot of us are addicted to sugar and we don't realize it because it's so easy to get. Like, we end our day with wine, which has a ton of sugar. And this happens with moms I see a lot. And we start it with, you know, something from Starbucks. No offense to Starbucks, but
right,
they sell a bunch of sugar in a cup. So it's very easy to just keep that sugar high going and no one looks twice at you. You're totally like in the cool kids club. No one, there's no intervention happening. So that's kind of a way of like, if you look at your day, what do you have to have? What is your, like, can you, like, if, you know, you were trapped in your house, what would you like freak out about? You know, and I think so much of it is just this collective agreement that, like, isn't it cool, like, 9 o'clock? Well, actually, how much wine are you drinking? Like, how much caffeine do you need and how much sugar are you putting into it? But I mean, in our own lives, I would say, like, what do you think you need to have to function? Yeah, caffeine is helpful, you know, but you don't actually need it.
Yeah, that distinction between needing things and wanting things is helpful. And I find too, talking to my clients about the fact that food is fuel. Mm-hmm. And if you actually just stop and ask, am I actually hungry versus am I eating for other, or am I bored, or am I whatever? It's a really quick triage as to whether or not you're engaging with food for the right or the wrong reasons.
Absolutely. I mean, what I always say to my clients and my children, because I have a almost 13-year-old and a 9-year-old, is would you eat a piece of chicken?
Right.
My kids give me amazing pushback, but my clients don't, interestingly enough. My kids are horrible clients, by the way.
Always. You can never treat your family.
Yeah, my husband is actually probably the worst client ever. But because if you're hungry, it comes on slowly. I mean, you wouldn't be thrilled with the chicken and broccoli, but you would eat it, you know, that kind of thing. Where if, like, you go from 0 to 60 in 5 minutes, which happens to be the amount of time you're talking about a project at work that you are having a hard time finishing, there's a connection. But the thing about emotional eating, which it took me a long time to wrap my brain around it, only because I did this for so many years, is when we decide to do a deep dive into a carton of ice cream, for example, we create a problem we're used to handling. Like, we're okay with, like, okay, so we're frustrated at work, so we eat a bunch of ice cream, right? So we're going to go deal with the emotional and the physical and all the consequences of the ice cream. Because let's face it, it's a huge amount of calories, the sugar, then we might go in a shame spiral, we're bloated, that whole drama, right? Well, what about work? That's still out there. The work is not getting addressed because the drama of the ice cream is just taking up all this bandwidth. So when we go and hide with the food, the actual issue isn't addressed. Now, if we decide to go right at the fork in the road instead of left, meaning the ice cream, and we actually sit down and think about, okay, how can we figure out this work thing? Like, what can be done? I don't know, maybe go online and buy shoes or find some other way to manage those feelings. The odds of the work situation being better are, I mean, 100%, right? While when we go down the road of the ice cream, I mean, you're going to be forgetting about work in a good, not so good way. But we often do that without even realizing it because we think, oh, we needed it, we deserved it. All those familiar stories.
We can always rationalize those things. It's so interesting. I was at a summit last week called the Archangel Summit, and there were two speakers that had just two like quick one-liners that I was like, ah, like you just can't escape the truth in either of those statements. And one was from Brendon Burchard, and he was like, because he was talking about his study of high performers, the six habits of high performance, and they did this huge research study. And he was like, high performers just address things head on.
Yes.
So if there's a problem at work, or you like you're avoiding a conversation with your husband, or you need to address something with your mom, and that's when you're going and you're going to go have a little bowl of ice cream, and as soon as I'm done that, then it's fine, or I'm gonna have that glass of wine and then I'll have the conversation, that's when you're leveraging those things in an unhealthy way. And for me, him just saying high performers just deal with it head on, I was like, oh, okay, I'm a high performer. Yeah. Like, no more. I don't do any of those things. So that was one that really struck me. And it just reminded me of that as you were speaking. And then the other one that, because it's also relevant to food, is Dave Asprey spoke. And he was talking about eating. He's like, listen, like, if you are hungry 2 hours after you eat, you failed at your last meal. And I love that because I was like, oh, like both of those were just these real like rapid call to attentions with respect to eating. So like if you're eating and you've also eaten a meal within the last 2 hours, you're either you ate poorly or you're using your food in the wrong way. And if you need another kick in the rear end and you identify as a high performer, like recognize that high performers just deal with things straight on. So is there something that you need to be dealing with? Like for me, it was just this, like, I couldn't escape those two lines. They were just a blaring truth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree completely about high performers because for me, it's been a really interesting evolution because once I've given up hiding in food, I'm like, look, I got a problem, Megan. Here we go. Like, yeah, full throttle Aaron coming at you. And I have so much more time now. It's just amazing. Because when you stop having these like coping, I'm using air quotes, these like fake coping mechanisms we think we have, right? Life is so much more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more like drama and just nonsense of like, look, we got, and it's not finger pointing. There's like, look, there's this thing at work we need to address because it's not, you know, we're not doing 100% about this, you know, that kind of problem solving versus finger pointing is what high performers do. And I've noticed like, as I've gotten away from hiding in food and, you know, I've lost some weight and written a book and all these other like great professional things, but internally in my relationships with other people, I'm so much more direct. I'm not like, a loose cannon by any means, but it's just, I'm very like, hey, we need to work this out. While I used to probably just be passive aggressive. So.
Right. Because your tolerance decreases as you perform at a higher level as well. You just don't have time for those things.
No. And I agree with Dave Asprey as well, because what I've noticed a lot is like the first week with my clients is the ones that are like texting me in near hysterics at 4 o'clock because they can't make it to lunch or two hours after whatever meal they're having, it's because their lunch, odds are, didn't have enough fat. So they, or something emotional happened. They're used to having a snack. There's something going on. Like, there's always something else. Because let's face it, most of us have enough fat storage. We're okay. But I agree. You did fail your last meal because we have this sort of like group thing of like, well, you know, we have to eat all the time. Actually, you'll be fine.
Yeah. That whole diet plan of you need to eat every like 90 minutes, a little bit, that research and that philosophy has sailed.
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things I found when I was reading through your stuff is you talk a lot about the connection between food and sleep. And, you know, one of the patterns that I have certainly observed in my patients is that when things aren't going well, they're stressed at work, they're not sleeping well, they make poor food choices. And then those poor food choices tend to lead to things not to go well. Like, they make choices that spiral them down really quickly. But sleep is a pain point for a lot of people. Like, their ears will perk up when they hear you talking about sleep and a way of being able to help their sleep. Can you just talk a little bit about the connection between food choice and its influence on sleep?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. Well, when we don't get enough sleep, our body, it craves, first of all, it just craves carbohydrates. It craves energy, which that's pretty much what carbohydrates are, right? Especially the quick acting ones. But we get in this really weird thing where we're not making the greatest choices because we're tired. And then we do things that flat out disrupt our sleep. Like, we eat too close to bedtime. We eat too much food, like the volume, like all those things. Like, you think about, like, after a really big meal, you have a hard time going to sleep. So when we don't get enough sleep, we have a really hard time making good food choices. And the choices we make also lead to poor sleep. So it's like this, you know, cycle. But something that I've had to really be aware of the last couple of years as I've really cleaned up my food, as I like to say it, is not eating close to bedtime. Because just first of all, you're not going to starve. You really aren't. But so many of us, like, we just feel restless at night. We have all these things. And so we just eat something. When that's, you know, your blood sugar goes up, like your body is still digesting food. So we don't sleep that well. We wake up in the morning. We're still tired. We need the coffee, you know, all that other stuff. It just creates this whole domino effect that all came from, you know, fatigue, right? So when we're eating right, we're getting enough sleep, we make better choices. And it's really, really difficult in some ways to get people just to like turn off their devices. But if you make a conscious effort just to like dial in your sleep, you will absolutely like feel so much better in a couple of days. And when I have my clients, like first time clients, like the first week, and I give them like the list of priorities, I give them their marching orders, they're always so surprised that I put sleep in front of exercise. Because they always think diet and exercise, right? And they're like, why is sleeping more important than exercise? And I said, because if you get enough sleep, you're going to feel better. You're going to just, your quality of life will be so much better. And if you exercise, fabulous. But when you sleep better, you get more sleep. Also, if you turn off all your devices an hour and a half before you want to be in bed, you probably go to sleep anyway. But you will just be so much more like grounded of a person than when you're, you know, surviving off like 4 or 5, 6 hours of sleep.
100%. And so, you know, if we're starting to spot, so I feel like a lot of people, they're driving in their car now. They're like, okay, shoot. Like, they got me. I am totally mindlessly eating. I will admit it only to myself so far, but okay. They're like, in their own head, they're just kind of uncomfortable with this whole conversation because they know that's the truth. And they've probably heard a few other things like, oh, I should turn my devices off. Like, this stuff actually matters and it works, which is why we both talk about it with our clients. But if we've pointed out all these issues, what I also want to be able to give people is solutions. So I know that you talk about this, like 5 things that people could do to literally be healthier by the end of the week. This is now Tuesday. Well, at least it's going to be released on a Tuesday. What can people do starting this second today, now that they've had this realization that they're like, I am mindlessly engaging this behavior that is spiraling me down? What can they do so they can spiral up by Friday?
Sure. A really nice way to start, and this is going to sound maybe weird, maybe it'll sound totally normal, is to just do one thing at a time. So just brush your teeth. That's it. Just brush your teeth. Or just talk to your kid. Or just walk the dog. So don't walk the dog and, you know, be answering emails. And, you know, we multitask so much and we're not doing anything well, right? So when we are more mindful, yeah, it's not the same as meditating, but just getting in that, getting on the road of being more present can start with something as simple as when you're brushing your teeth, you're completely engaged in just brushing your teeth. Like the smell, how the toothbrush feels in your hand, how your teeth are, just something like that. It doesn't take any money. It doesn't take any special gadgets, but just heightening our awareness to everyday tasks and then going from there. Something else we can do is like, look at your schedule. What does your schedule say about your priorities? Because oftentimes what we say we prioritize and what we schedule, and when you compare the two, they don't always line up, right? So for me, I just exercised once and I was like so horrified about right. What was in my schedule. I'm like, there's no time with my kids. There's, you know, but you don't want to schedule like a bonding time with child. But let's face it, if you're really busy, you need to schedule it or else something's going to come in there. So for, you know, schedule the exercise, you know, block out times when you aren't available for clients or aren't available for phone calls, or else let's face it, you will work all weekend. So what does your schedule say about your priorities? And make time for things or else they're never going to happen, whether it be, you know, catching up with friends, sleep, you know, whatever it is, does your schedule reflect your priorities? So the next thing is when you procrastinate or find yourself in that avoidance mode, ask yourself, what are you avoiding and what are you avoiding with? So for instance, if you are supposed to be, you know, doing something at work and you find yourself doing a deep dive to see what everyone in high school is doing on Facebook, what is that about? Don't just wander around for half an hour looking at everyone's, you know, pictures. What don't you want to do at work? Why is it? And what do you think you're getting on Facebook that you're not getting somewhere else? Because when we're hiding behind things, there's something there. Like, why can't we just start the project? Because when we procrastinate, we're really wasting our own time and we're not living as high as we can. And let's just address, maybe we're confused. Maybe we need to go talk to someone in the office. Maybe we need to call a colleague we work with one or two jobs ago to say like, hey, let's brainstorm. Whatever it is, you know, tooling around someone else's baby pictures is not going to get the job done, right?
Maybe you need a new job.
Maybe you need a new job. Maybe you need a new something, but nothing's going to get resolved hanging out in someone else's Facebook wall for an hour. All right. So getting back to the sleep, figure out and keep to a pretty consistent sleep schedule. And it can be done as simple as look at when you want to be asleep and work backwards. So if you want to be asleep by 11, all devices off at 9:30. That means your iPad, which my husband cannot manage, but just ignore him. Because if you read in bed and it's the light on your brain, it still stimulates, you know, the blue light and the rays and stuff. So if that means you have to buy a book or a magazine, you can still read, but the TV, you know, the phone, the iPad, all those tablets still keep part of our brain awake, harder to go to sleep. You know, just have a sleep routine, even if it's simple as like you take a shower or you put on fresh pajamas, like Mr. Rogers used to do, right? You can sing a song if you'd like, I don't know, whatever. But just kind of get a little ritual going, because so many of us just collapse. And when we tell our subconscious and our conscious, hey, it's time to go to sleep, we're a lot more likely to have restful sleep. And also just look at what you're eating, because a lot of us just sort of shove food in And we aren't conscious at all of what we're eating because we're just waiting till we're way too hungry, right? Like, you know, we're eating lunch at 3:30 on a Monday because we haven't even gotten any chance of like thought about lunch at all. And we just, you're eating at our desk, all this other stuff. So like, just be aware of when you're eating, are you making enough time for meals? Because ideally, you shouldn't just be scarfing down your food. Bad for your digestion, bad for a lot of stuff. So just a little more awareness of what kind of food you're eating, how you're eating it. And also pay attention when you're eating it. Do you even like it? Like, some people find out when they actually slow down and eat, they don't even like, you know, cake or, you know, salad or whatever it is, but they're just so disconnected from the experience that they just don't even know.
Totally. Yeah, you like cake because you like serotonin. So you eat refined carbs. It's funny. I talk to my patients about that all the time. I was like, let's take these things that you're chasing, technology or food or whatever else they're doing, and we put it on the level of like neurochemistry. And then suddenly when they're like, oh, I actually just need serotonin. I just need to feel good and happy. Then we just give them five new activities that will drive them towards happiness that isn't cake, right? Like, it's some when you know better, you do better, right?
Yeah. And I also think too, like, it's almost like with a bank account, where if you think of like the long-term savings, you know, you put in a little bit and a little bit and a little bit and interest compounds, right? Versus like blowing it all on like that shiny object, which a lot of us are kind of doing with our health, you know, and we don't realize that, like, you know, slow and steady wins the race of, you know, getting enough sleep, having some sort of stress management tool, like eating right. Or, you know, if you're not eating right, figure out what's going on, because, like, you know, look at things head on. And at least for me, like, just figuring out that, like, I was emotionally eating for so many years helped me on so many levels. And I think it's something that we all could do, but it's so much easier and safer just to go on the, you know, go on keto, right? And it can be done. It can all be done.
On October 26th and 27th, we're doing something really special in Toronto. For those of you who have been hanging out on the Anthropology podcast for a period of time, you know that we are driven by the mission that when people are well, they can change the world. On October 26th and 27th, I'm going to be hosting an event in Toronto called Impact Lives. This event has been designed for clinician entrepreneurs and wellness entrepreneurs in general who want to learn how to amplify their business. We are bringing in keynote speakers from across North America and implementation session leaders to help you not only become more inspired with respect to your business, but to learn new skills that you can start to implement right away. Whether you want to launch your own podcast, write your first book proposal, or create a system for patient acquisition or new clients that takes your business to the whole new level, we have got your back. Impact Lives is a two-day event taking place at the Globe and Mail Center in downtown Toronto in a stunning venue that overlooks the city. It's going to bring together 150 passionate entrepreneurs looking to take the lives of their families, themselves, and the people that they work with to a whole new level. For those of you who have been loyal listeners, I would love to have you there. There is a coupon code that I am releasing just for listeners of the Anthropology podcast. That is Anthropology20. And if you go to impactlivesevent.com, you can use that coupon code to receive 20% off the ticket price for the event happening in October. I cannot wait to see action takers, go-getters, and anthropologists like yourselves there when we gather together for Impact Lives.
You know, I think this is such a beautiful place to transition to the second component of our interview, which I like to call our KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our life as well. So I've got six rapid fire questions for you, which give all of us a bit of an insight in terms of some of the things that you prioritize in your life, because it gives us a behind the scenes look in terms of how you put these things into practice. So if you're game, I've got the first one coming your way.
I'm a little scared. Okay, let's go.
Don't be. There's no math. There's no physics. You just like go with the flow. Just feel it. First one. Do you have a consistent evening routine? And if so, can you share?
Yeah, sure. It's super exciting, let me tell you. I go upstairs at 8:30. I take a bath and I read and have my lights out by 10. Sometimes I take a bath. Sometimes I take a shower, but I unplug everything. I mean, I put on airplane mode, say goodnight to my kids, make sure the animals have, not my children, the actual dog and cat, have done whatever. And I try to have lights out by 10, at least my lights out, because I need my sleep. It's not good if I don't get my sleep.
Totally. You've got it's like, I'm always blown away how amazing I feel if I actually just go to bed.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever regret going to bed early?
Never. Well, no, never.
It's like a shot of tequila, right? You never regret not having it.
Exactly. Just like tequila. Except the next day you feel way better. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
I'm reading fiction right now. I just finished A Simple Favor because I think I'm seeing the movie tonight.
Nice. Timely. What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Definitely water. I drink tons of water, like without exception.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I mean, I'm just a serious athlete. I ran a bunch of half marathons. I did a Tough Mudder. You know, I definitely.
Oh, yeah. Are badass.
Yeah, like physically, like if we're talking like Booyah, like Wonder Woman stuff, like I've done a bunch of that stuff. If we're talking like professionally, like I've done like, you know, big speeches. I've done my books coming out in a couple months. Like, you know, I can't draw to save my life. Singing is not good. But yeah, I could definitely like, you know, do an endurance race, no problem.
There you go. That I could not do. What do you do for fun or play?
I really like to surf. I started surfing a couple years ago. I go to Costa Rica a couple times a year to go surfing. And my favorite, probably this could have been on the badass category, is when I went surfing in the Maldives, which is a little bit frightening because they drop you off in the middle of the ocean because there aren't any real beaches.
Oh yeah. Let's put that in the badass category. Yeah. Now we've got that covered. And yeah. Last question for you, Erin, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think it depends, but I also think born this way because being an entrepreneur means like you're kind of a risk taker and there's a lot of daily, you know, is this going to work? And you have to be so confident in yourself and believe in yourself when the phone is not ringing and no one's asking you to come talk for them and the clients are not booking, that some days you need to believe in yourself for more than, you know, for more than just yourself. So I think born this way, but I also think we're always up for more improvement. And I know, at least with myself, that I could always use a little fine tuning.
Fair answer, Erin Wathen. You are up to some incredible things. Where can people go to find out more about what it is that you are doing?
My website is Erin Wathen Wellness. Same thing on Instagram.
Amazing. So we're going to make sure people are linked up in our show notes to Instagram and to your website. Best of luck as your book launches. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Thank you so much, Megan. This was great.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.